This is the Quality News Network. New Orleans City Council members unanimously approved a controversial plan to tear down 4,500 public housing units damaged by Hurricane Katrina. A crowd of demonstrators tried to get into today's meeting inside New Orleans City Hall, but were kept out by local police using pepper spray and stun guns. Legal challenges to the proposal are pending. California Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger is suing the federal government over its decision not to allow the state's current plan to reduce greenhouse gas vehicle emissions. President Bush just signed a new car emission bill yesterday, but Governor Schwarzenegger says he wants better for California. Meantime, the White House wants a dual strategy to combat global warming. According to President Bush this morning, a two-pronged strategy is needed, bring other countries to this table, and develop a national plan. Bush says he opposes the Kyoto Protocol because China is not a participant. Mr. Bush says a national plan is needed, but he won't compromise the American standard of living. A year-long battle over the federal budget has come to an end. President Bush both admonished and praised Congress for passing a $556 billion spending plan. A CNN poll released today shows the top three Democratic presidential candidates in a dead heat in Iowa 2 weeks before the caucuses. And leading the Republican slate, former Arkansas Governor Mike Huckabee, followed by former Massachusetts Governor Mitt Romney. Former New York City Mayor Rudy Giuliani is in third place. Congressman Tom Tancredo dropped out of the race today for the Republican nomination and threw his support to rival Mitt Romney. The House Intelligence Committee issued a subpoena for Jose Rodriguez, the former CIA official who ordered the destruction of secret interrogation videotapes of two terror suspects. Rodriguez will face the committee on the 16th of next month. Meantime, the CIA says it will turn over documents to Congress about the destructions of those tapes made during interrogations of Al-Qaeda terror suspects. The Pentagon has announced plans to increase the Army by 74,000 soldiers, adding six new combat brigades to major bases in Colorado, Georgia, and Texas. And a leading South African prosecutor says there's enough evidence to charge the country's newest president-elect with corruption. You're listening to the Quality News Network.
Huelhauser talks to customers of First National, South Valley, and San Benito Banks, local members of the network of preferred community banks.
We're here to talk with people about their local banking.
So what do you look for when you decide where you're going to put all your millions?
Well, I haven't printed up enough to put it in the bank yet, but I guess for convenience and... pretty much, it's like your grocery market. You get to meet the people there, and you build a little rapport with some of them.
You know, it's a local bank, but it's part of a network of local banks that give you big bank services.
Everything that I need as far as banking is concerned, they have it. Online banking is great for me. So I just like the services that they offer.
You ever taken your dog Cindy to the bank?
As a matter of fact, when I went to open my account, she was with me.
Ah!
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if we have a horse come through one of these days. We got a lot of cowboys coming in and out of here, too.
Above and Beyond Banking from the network of preferred community banks. Available locally at First National Bank of Central California, South Valley National Bank, and San Benito Bank.
The U.S. Commerce Department reports that gross domestic product grew at 4.9% pace last quarter. They say that performance is especially impressive given the current state of the country's housing market. The U.S. economy surged over the summer at its fastest pace in 4 years, but then lagged in the last 3 months of this year under the housing and credit crunch. But a new rise in jobless claims indicates that the labor market is softening. FedEx reported lower quarterly profit. Company officials say higher fuel costs and the weak U.S. economy are to blame. The maker of BlackBerry smartphones reports the company's third quarter profit more than doubled in the third quarter. That's due to strong demand by consumers and businesses. Research in Motion Limited earned $370.5 million, or 65 cents a share, compared to 31 cents a share from the third quarter 2006. Tribune Company sold for $8.2 billion today. Its sale closed after an 8.5-month delay to secure final approval and financing. Light sweet crude oil trading at $91.06 a barrel, gold at $803.20 an ounce. At today's close of Wall Street, the Dow Jones Industrial Average up 38 points to end at 13,245, NASDAQ up nearly 40 points, the S&P 500 up 7. And there's always more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Barbara Lewis.
Strictly confidential. Gather around the radio, kids. It's time for Strictly Confidential. It's the homosexual agenda on steroids, putting the dominionists and the loyal Bushies and the rest of America's underbelly on notice that the GLBT community is simply not going to take it anymore. So, just like gay kryptonite, here's Peter Godbold.
Into the studio, testing. Please stand by. We're having some technical difficulties connecting with Peter at his location in Florida. We will rejoin as soon as the connection is reestablished. Thank you for your patience. Okay, we're going to run a little bit of a test. Good evening, America, and I'm looking, yes, wonderful. Good evening, America, and good morning, world. Welcome to book, chapter, and verse 90 already of Strictly Confidential. I am Peter Godbold, and welcome to the LGBTQQS, that is lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, queer, questioning, and straight version of Conversation Radio, exclusively on the listener-supported Head On Radio Network. Thank you for making Strictly Confidential a part of your day. Today is, in fact, Thursday, December the 20th, so if you're listening on a Thursday evening shortly after 9 p.m., you're indeed listening to a live show. We had a bit of an anomaly during the startup sequence. I just had a tone in my headset, so we had to make a few corrections and reestablish a connection, but everything seems to be fine now. I do want to point out to you, though, that a dark and stormy night is approaching, and this dark and stormy night is approaching from the west. The Wicked Witch of the West is no doubt sending it my way. The rain bands have just now reached Tallahassee, and of course I am east of Tallahassee just a bit, and being east of Tallahassee, it should hit here shortly. In any case, we're expecting, quote, heavy thunderstorms and 1 to 2 inches of rain, etc., etc. Now, if I have a power failure, it'll switch over to backup, and of course I can go to generator. If the web goes down, however, then there's really not much I can do about that, except we'll just fade to black if the web goes down. But so far, everything is completely clean here. I haven't had any web bounces, so things look good. The show site is strictlyconfidentialradio.com, And there you're going to find links to all of the guests as well as to the audio archives from the past shows. You'll find links to the chat room, which is active as I speak, and you'll find out about all of the other progressive programming on the Head On Radio Network. There are also links there for Strictly Confidential's MySpace page and links to help you locate the music that you hear on the show. Speaking of the music that you hear on the show, gosh, what a privilege it is to talk to all the wonderful musical guests, that people that I would have never met, not in a million years. I've been in contact today with Larry Sanders. Now, Larry was one of the famous DJs from the Sandpiper up in Fire Island, DJ Larry Sanders, and he was one of the very early remixers. We're going to run some of his tracks later tonight. He's not with us this evening, but Larry will be joining us at some point during February, and what a wonderful DJ he is. I'm so proud to have met him. At some point, you might even would like to stop by the site. It's morningstarmelody.com. That's morningstarmelody.com. And there you'll find all of the music and the CDs. And by the way, any of the CDs that you might choose to purchase there are used to help children. One is the Starlight Starbright Children's Foundation, and the other is St. Jude's Children's Hospital. So it's for a good cause, and he's a great DJ. We have several of his tracks, which we'll run later in the evening. The telephone number is 877, the number 4-HEAD-ON. That's 877-4-HEAD-ON. If you have unlimited long distance, please use that, and that rings in West Virginia. And it's 304-658-3333. Peter arrives. There was a time I could communicate, I swear to you. Email arrives to Peter at headonradionetwork.com. That's Peter at headonradionetwork.com. And, you know, we've been talking today. So many interesting things have been on the Head On Radio Network this evening. With Mark and with Bob and the interview that they had that went on for quite a while. It was so in-depth. I'm sorry I didn't get to listen to all of that, but I thought, what a remarkable guest. He was someone who presented himself calmly and coolly, and even though he was someone from the, I take it, a more religious conservative side of the fence, but I didn't hear the intro. But in any case, I just thought, what a wonderful place it is to be able to have a civil conversation about the subjects that seem to be so touchy these days. He's someone I wouldn't mind having on my own show. During the course of listening to that and bringing things to mind, I began thinking about the Lakota Indians, which, of course, has absolutely no relation to what I was just talking about, but in my mind it makes perfect sense to go from one to the other. The Lakota Indians, of course, have given us notice that they are no longer citizens of the United States, and to them I say, well done. I wish I could go with you. The leaders are also saying that they don't mean this as a way to embarrass the United States, but it's a way to continue the struggle for our children and our grandchildren, and they are just moving away from the treaties. It says we have 33 treaties that the United States does not live by. They continue to take our land, our water, and our children, and they're basically kissing us off. And I thought that was, well, way to go. Made me think about you know, the whole thing about LGBT folks and the Indian tribes. There's so much about how basically the LGBT folks were treated rather well. In fact, part of the community, in many at least of the Indian tribes. And I went to do a search on the Lakota Indians and what it was like for the LGBT folks there, and I found a, my gosh, it looks like a whole dissertation on just that subject of the Lakota Indians, and it is, oh my stars, it goes on page after page. It's tightly typed. I mean, it's got, you know, thesis written all over it, but it's really amazing reading. Maybe I can look this fellow up, because it seems like, in fact, it's something very interesting to me. My great-great-grandmother was full-blooded Cherokee, so, I mean, it's a subject that's not too distant from me, but the Lakota Indians, of course, were known as being great warriors, but they acknowledged amongst themselves that not all males were destined to become warriors. And some people have mistranslated some of the documents in saying that the ones that weren't warriors were actually the gay guys, but that's not the way it worked there. The gay guys were called Winkette, and W-I-N means woman, and K-T-E means wanting to be like. Okay, wanting to be like a woman was their phrase for it. But the way they looked at it is that not all Lakota men were expected to go to war. And men who didn't go to war were not classified as Winkette, because not all of these people were, quote, the third gender. And men did not look down upon the men who did not choose to go to war, whether they were straight or gay. They were just part of the community. Now, there were many Winkette men there. Some of them preferred to, some of them excelled in women's crafts. They did tanning and embellishing and quilting and porcupine stuff, and I guess they used the quills and rawhide containers and sewing covers. And some preferred to take care of children. And in fact, there were whole naming ceremonies where it was considered to be great luck or good fortune for your child to be named by a gay guy, Winkette. And some of the Winkettes did go on the path of war and went out with the warriors and fought. Some cooked and mended the moccasins, and some were performing clairvoyant rituals. It's not clear about sexual encounters out of the battlefield, because by and large their society was, they did fasting and praying, and they refrained from sex altogether during times of battle. Regarding sexual partners, there were obvious sexual partners, but the Lakota called it, those were men that, quote, they looked for each other, end quote. I don't fully understand that. By the way, for our lesbian friends, there's apparently no word in Lakota that means lesbian, but there are stories about it. And I'm sorry, I was distracted for just a moment. There were stories from the about the lesbians in the tribe, but they are not there's no particular word for it. So maybe over the weekend, the long weekend, I will be able to locate this gentleman who wrote this paper, or it might even be a woman. I didn't make a note of the name of the person who wrote the paper, but what an interesting topic to find out what's going on in the LGBT community of the tribe that just kicked the United States to the curb. Way to go, people. Let's see, where else are we going this evening? We talked about the music, and it has been a strange year, has it not? Very strange year. You remember back when the movie 2001 A Space Odyssey came along, we were all wondering what it would be like when 2000 came in 2001. Well, I can safely tell you that it's nothing like that. In fact, as far as the LGBT community is concerned, and for all of us progressive people, 2007 has been a major kick in the butt. As for our community, we had Larry Craig introduce us to the term wide stance. And he put the moves on the undercover cop in the next stall and ended up pleading guilty and couldn't get out of it. Then there was Ted Haggard, who is the National Association Evangelicals president, and he was outed as a regular customer of a gay hustler. And he magically, by the way, became heterosexual in just 3 weeks. Then we had Glenn Murray. He was the newly elected chair of the Young Republican National Federation. Oh, what an honor for a young, silver-spooned rich boy to be the leader of the National Federation. But he had to resign shortly after that, last August, as a matter of fact. He was arrested for performing oral sex on a man who was sleeping near him. Apparently there had been a gathering of the young Republican animals, and they had it was too far to drive home, blah, blah, blah. They were staying over at Glenn Murphy's sister's house, I think is the way this one went down. And the heterosexual man woke up with Glenn Murray performing oral sex, and then it all went to the police. And see, there's nothing new with Glenn Murray. It's just that he was able to keep it out of the press before. Back in 1988, he did the same thing, a similar crime on a guy whose girlfriend was even in the same room. Then we had Bob Allen this year offer to pay an undercover cop $20, and rather than admit that he was gay, he is definitely not gay, he said that he had acted out of fear. It was easier for him to be a racist than a homosexual. He acted out of fear that the African-American men there near the restroom area were going to attack him for his $20. Then we had Jim Nagel, who's the mayor of Fort Lauderdale, who wanted to spend $250,000 on robo-toilets to discourage the gay men from having sex in the public bathrooms. And he was arguing he was going to keep the gays from taking over the city. Now, a couple of problems with that. One in particular was there had been no arrests in years in the public restrooms there on the beach in Fort Lauderdale. And by the way, I just want to point something out. Not too long ago, in a one-month period in New York State, there's a roadside restroom. Okay, don't know which road it's on. But in a period of 1 month, 20 men were arrested for public sex in this restroom. 19 of them, and by the way, one of the 19 was a Rotary Club president, 19 of them were married. The 20th one? Well, he was a Catholic priest. You know, we're getting a little bit tired of your painting us with your crayons. Good Lord. Closet cases in this country, but none of them are gay. None of them. And then we had the visitors to Florida. Remember, he was a law professor and his partner. They arrived at an airport in South Florida, and all of a sudden, you know, it was late at night, and so the airport was not particularly crowded, so, you know, it would be easy with someone watching the security cameras to isolate any single person or any small people, or in other words, this couple who are standing by the luggage to pick up the luggage. And I guess they appeared to be a gay couple. And all of a sudden, over the loudspeaker system, the entire airport heard it. A man who lies with another man as he would with a woman is subject to death. And, of course, they were terrified. I mean, it's late at night. They had to walk out to a rental car, and you've got some nutcase on the airport intercom. It ended up in the news and the whole bit. So then we had Mary Cheney, and she has the baby. And then proud Dick Cheney, they were talking to him in the interview, and he says that this was a blessed event, and any questions are out of line. That's what he said. And then at the same time, the White House is saying that Mary and Heather were the child's parents. And then we have the Pope Benedict, who wears the Prada high-heel shoes, and he reminded us that gay marriage is not negotiable. And this is going on at the same time that the Vatican, Monsignor, is caught on a hidden camera making advances to some kid there at the Vatican, claiming, he claims that he was only pretending as a part of his ministry. Oh, so that's what they're calling it these days. And then there was the word faggot. That was huge in 2007. I remember Isaac Washington, he used the word on the set of Grey's Anatomy. And then they called him on it, and then he went to gay rehab, and he hired a gay publicist, and the results were that Washington got fired, but glad they got a new celebrity PSA out of Washington, and the co-star T.R. Knight, who he was the fellow that, you know, Washington called a fag, he, you know, got better lines in the show. And then you had Ann Coulter hurl a fag line at John Edwards, and then you had a CBS sportscaster say on the air that he used the term fag out regarding some team or something he was going on. And then remember the Super Bowl commercial. You had the two mechanics there eating the Snickers bars from opposite ends, and they wind up actually meeting in the middle, and they kiss. And then, so to restore their manly vibes, one of them slams the car hood down on the other one's head. And if you went to the Snickers website, you could enjoy three different versions of the ad, but all of the versions ended in violence, with one of the men slamming the other one into a wall. And then there were clips of the Super Bowl players watching the commercials, and they were all making faces and disgusted when the guys kissed. It just amazes to me. Then you had the NBA player John Amici. He came out, and when he came out, the fellow Hardaway makes a statement to the press. Well, you know, I hate gay people, so I let it be known. I don't like gay people. Don't like to be around gay people. Yeah, I'm homophobic. I don't like it. It shouldn't be in the world. Well, gee, that's certainly a godly statement, is it not? To decide what's actually in the world. Oh, Lord have mercy. And then there was the movie Wild Hogs and the movie I Pronounce You Chuck and Larry. And, of course, in Wild Hogs, you had four, and I've seen both movies. No, I've only seen Wild Hogs. I can't bring myself to watch Chuck and Larry. But in Wild Hogs, you've got four suburbanites, and they love to wear leather, and they ride motorcycles all over the country, but they're absolutely not gay. And then you have Chuck and Larry, and they're two straight firemen, and they get a civil union so they can get health benefits, but they're absolutely not gay. And then, you know, it goes on and on. You've got Mark Wahlberg and John Travolta. Wahlberg says he turned down the one of the roles in Brokeback Mountain because the script, quote, creeped him out. Now, of course, Mark Wahlberg, on this other side of the coin, says that at the same time he said Brokeback creeped him out, he did accept roles in Four Brothers and The Truth About Charlie. And then a star of Wild Hogs, John Travolta, told the press there's absolutely nothing about Hairspray that is gay, except for the gay director of the original movie, and the gay man who wrote the songs and several of the stars. And then there was Corporal Matt Sanchez, and he was the Iraq War veteran who became the right-wing poster boy. You remember him? He said he was silenced by the activists at Columbia University, and he was on Ann Coulter, and he was a major Marine stud. And it turned out that Sanchez was a porn star, a male porn star and escort, like, you know, Jeff Gannon. He his porn name was Rod Majors, and he also had a site up as an escort service. Lord. And then there's Bill O'Reilly, who claims that he gets it. He gets the whole thing. He gets it about gays, and he says there's a national underground network of lesbians terrorizing the nation and raping women and randomly attacking heterosexual men and indoctrinating young girls. And Riley later, of course, admitted that was an overstatement, but we know that that's just his phrase for "I was lying." And then there was the American Association. All went on about the San Diego Padres game because they hosted a gay night at one of the games where kids under 12 got in free, and that was a problem. It was, you know, thousands of gay couples showed up with their partners to watch the game sitting alongside the straight folks, but the kids got in free, and it was apparently very traumatic. he said that was insane, Bill O'Reilly did. And by the way, in the same show, Bill O'Reilly had to be reminded that J.K. Rowling's was a woman. He didn't know. He thought it was a man. He was going on about the fact that Dumbledore was gay. Lord, and then you've got Dianne Feinstein. You remember she was all weepy-eyed when Harvey Milk was killed, and back when she was a California senator. But then this year she jumped on the other side of the fence and approved the nomination of Judge Southwick. Remember, he was the one that had advocated removing gay parents' biological children from their home. He took one lesbian woman's child and told her that when she finally got herself straight and moved out from her female partner, that she could have the child back. Lord have mercy. I'll stop. It's getting toward the end of the year, and you know, I just wanted to do. It's just one of those news days that there's not that much to tell you about. Now, I wanted to do a bit of a recap about some of the things that we have been through this year. And we have been through a lot, as has all of you, as have each and every one of us. I want to get into the Matthew Murray thing just a little bit. You remember Matthew Murray just recently. I know it's probably been all over television. As you know, I gave up television. Don't deal with it. It made me scream and it scared the dog. But he's the fellow who killed the four members of Ted Haggard's New Life Church in Colorado Springs before he shot himself. And this has got to be has been covered by the mainstream media left and right and on and on and on, to the point that you're probably sick of hearing it, because they always jump on this sort of thing. And I haven't said much about it, but there were some words several days ago, maybe a week or so ago, that the guy was gay, and or at least a Denver television station is saying that he might have been at least bisexual. What I'm not seeing in the mainstream media reports, though, is that this kid is a victim of the ex-gay movement. In addition to having a nutcase mother who homeschooled him. And, by the way, her favorite pastor was Ted Haggard. And in addition to the fact he didn't fit in, his sexual orientation was he tried doing the way what the church wanted him to do, and he tried going through the ex-gay movement, which apparently the organization he was kicked out of there on the campus, let's see if I can locate the organization's name. It was one of those Youth with a Mission thing. It's been involved in the ex-gay movement, and it's one of the conservative Christian groups that's been brought together by Exodus International, which is, of course, the largest of the ex-gay organizations. So we have Matthew Murray, who was no doubt driven crazy by his nutcase mother, and he rebelled in any way he could the way teenagers do. You know, he took drugs, he played Marilyn Manson, video games, all the things he wasn't supposed to do. It's, you know, the standard stuff that, you know, that kids do. But this kid had an orientation issue. He told his mother at one point, he said, I'm using drugs and alcohol, and I'm having gay sex. I'm trying to do what any Christian pastor would do, and I'm at least not doing meth like Ted Haggard, which was the meth guy with Mike Jones. But his repeated posts on the various sites, they became more and more erratic. He was saying, there's no mercy for people like me, and how come they get forgive and love Ted Haggard, but they don't care about me? You see, they kicked him out of the teen facility there, what was it called, Youth with a Mission, for, quote, health problems. Now, they refused to define what these health problems were, but as you already know, evangelical Christians often see homosexuality as both a sin and a sickness. So that was no doubt the health problem, because you see he wasn't responding to their reprogramming to make him to heterosexual. What can I tell you? And so right now what's happening with the media is struggling to find some framework to present this with. There's no template, there's no pattern, there's no roadmap for how to present this to the public. What if a heavily armed Christian conservative, okay, he walks into a congregation of worshipers who are at a metropolitan community church, which is, as most of you know, it's primarily LGBT folks. Okay, now if he did this after weeks of violent posts on the internet and anti-gay language on the internet, and he starts blowing people away, well, of course, that fits the hate crime template, and the media knows what to do with that. If you have a white racist and he blows up an African-American church, that fits the racism template, and it also fits the hate crime template. So if you have a Christian attack a mosque, that's a hate crime. A Muslim attack a synagogue, well, that gets a little bit more complex, because not only is it hate, it's also terrorism, because you know how we do that here. So it's not just a hate crime, it also fits the terrorism template. But, if you had an ex-gay activist disrupt a same-sex union into the Episcopal Church, that would be maybe a hate crime, but it also falls in the pattern of a civil rights protest. There's all these different templates that the media uses, but they have no idea what to do with this guy. The journalists are it seems to me, are trying to figure out what is a health issue, what was his driving force. Here's an example. This is one of the a family spokesman said Murray grew up in a loving home. But other interviews and what appeared to be Murray's own online ramblings portray a disturbed individual who's resented his sheltered upbringing and had a problem with his mother. He heard voices in his head and felt rejected and abused. Okay, he heard voices in his head. Okay, so, maybe it wasn't a very long drive. Okay, I think we can all admit that. It wasn't a very long trip, but I think maybe she kind of drove him crazy. And you're throwing him into the, filling him with self-hate and the rigid Christian attitude from an ex-gay facility for crying out loud. There's so many different ways to look at this. Of course, they're people dead, but one hand I want to say, yeah, well, if you raise your kids like that, I lay this at his mother's feet. Screw that woman. I got to tell you, some of it is, the chickens are coming home to roost when stuff like this happens. And, and one part of me wants to say, well, I'm glad he took out a bunch of homophobes with him, But by the same token, it's a terrible thing to happen, that the church that's supposed to love us and bring us into the fold and teach us a way that we can all love each other and become the family of man is the church that drove him nuts. And this kid didn't need to be homeschooled. He didn't have any social skills. He didn't know how to fit in. I mean, you know, you develop your social skills by interacting with other kids your age as you're growing up. Obviously, you don't learn it in a book. Social skills are learned on the fly. That's what interaction is all about. One of the news reports says that what they found in his home was a Beretta ammunition, a pamphlet called The Fall of America. The literature was a part of the Youth with a Mission program. He had a Bible and a journal and a pistol and a homicide investigation manual. He had prescription pills, several hard drives, gun cases and a box of ammunition, and a picture of Ted Haggard. Lord have mercy. Talk about one screwed up individual. Well, I've gone past bottom of the hour break, and I guess we did have kind of a stumbling start, but nonetheless, I should wet my whistle. Tell you what we're going to do. We're not going to do a bottom of the hour break. Let's run one of our tracks. I really want to get to these. All of these tracks were tracks that were played at the Sandpiper, which was Fire Island, and these tracks date from around 1971, 1970, through about 1978. Now, our friend Larry Sanders will join us in February, and he did all of these remixes. They're just stunning. They are really fabulous, and what he was working with back in the day was like 45 RPM records that had playing times of, you know, 3 minutes, 2 minutes, 59 seconds, and he masterfully blended these things to bring them out to a full dance track of like 6.5 minutes or 7 minutes, because that's the nature of dance music. I mean, by the time the crowd gets into it, the record ends. You know, so it was an impossible scenario. So he took these radio edits, and I got to tell you, you know, if I've never laid eyes on a man, but if I walked into a club where he was playing, I wouldn't stand a chance. I'd be proposing to him in 10 minutes. Just wonderful music, and the first one is a bit of a Christmas kind of song. I think you'll enjoy it. It was one that was played there at the Sandpiper. And it's by Love Unlimited, extended by Larry Sanders. It's called It May Be Winter Outside. you believe that? What a flawless and masterful remix to be able to create that from what, probably a 2.5 minute, 45 RPM, and to produce that length of audio, and he's very, very skillful at it. And we'll have him in February. And again, his website is morningstarmelody.com, and so I'll talk about that from time to time. We have a couple more tracks from him. And in the meantime, I calm down a little bit. You know, it's always one of those, like, uh-oh, you know, this, you know, the music stops, Strictly Confidential, and then it's like, uh-oh, I have a tone in my ear, and I don't think anybody can hear me. Oh, man. But, you know, that is the joy of live radio. It's like a box of chocolates. You just never know what you're going to get. And frankly, I'm just glad the electricity is on. That, got electricity. The internet is apparently working. The major storm hasn't gotten here quite yet, so that's all good. In any case, things are working out, and I think I'm back on an even keel. Has anybody heard about the story of, she's a news anchor in Philadelphia. She's like a big deal news anchor. Everybody loves her. She's like mega gorgeous and blonde. You know, all the requirements for a mega newscaster on a, you know, big market station like in Philadelphia. Well, she is currently the talk of the town, and she was arrested for assaulting a female police officer over the weekend. Now, she called the officer a dyke and verbally abused her and then punched her in the face. She was later released, her own recognizance, and she's denying everything. She, you know, lawyer says, no, she didn't do it. By the way, she was recently also very popular because she sent pictures of herself in a bikini to an NFL network host. Everyone was Googling her name on the Internet to try to find her bikini pictures. And then somebody's wife found them. I think the network host's wife found them. And standard, you know, sanctity of marriage stuff, you know, sanctity of marriage. So anyway, Lane is an evening news anchor on CBS, here it is, KYW, and it was in Manhattan, by the way, and what happened was she and her boyfriend's name is Chris, there was another couple unidentified, and they were traveling in a taxi through Manhattan, and they got upset over a slow vehicle that was, you know, blocking their way, which sounds to me like standard Manhattan stuff, but apparently it was unacceptable for a famous news anchor whose bikini pictures are being posted on the internet. So she confronted the passengers of the slow vehicle, which just happened to be a group of police officers in plain clothes. Now, one of the officers asked Lane, she was taking photos with her iPhone. One of the officers asked Lane to just step back. Well, this ticked off Miss Lane big time. She started in verbally abusing the officer. She screamed at the officer, "I don't give a F*CK who you are. I'm a reporter, you F*CKing dyke." You know, this is the problem with believing your own press. Rush Limbaugh does this. He fully believes this same mentality. "I don't give a who you are. I'm a reporter, you dyke. You liberal." You know, God, if I ever start believing my own press, and I don't get that much of it, then I hope the chat room just knocks me upside the head. In fact, that goes for all of the head-on hosts. If any of us get a big head, that's what the chat room is for. We're getting constant feedback from those folks. But I got to tell you, that these people, the depth of their just self-centered and self-righteous and complete abandon on going off on people because they are the media. And in fact, it's a little bit true. The media is running this country, absolutely running this country, because they just tell the White House spin. They're complicit in it. Well, I'll take it back. Cheney's running the country. Bush is an idiot, and the press enables it. It's like a sick alcoholic relationship, isn't it? Or a cocaine relationship, any sort of drug addicted relationship, and Bush is, of course, God knows what he's on. You know, they had to confiscate, they had to, like, have a special potty when he was, wasn't it in Australia? They had to scoop up his poop because they didn't want anybody to get President Poop to analyze it to see what kind of medications the idiot's on. Good Lord, I bet he's on everything from codeine to, well, you know, take your pick. Like Elvis Presley. Oh, I can't say that on the air, but it involves being found in a toilet. Okay. So anyway, she was arrested on charges of felony assault and police officer. She is denying everything. However, the police officer had to go to the hospital. She was treated at a local hospital. She had several lacerations and swelling on her face. There is no indication as to whether she was a effing dyke or not. Doesn't really make much difference to me. It really shouldn't anybody else. And that's all I know about that particular story. Okay, we have Jim on the line. Good evening to you, Jim. Welcome to the show.
Peter.
Hi there.
How are you? Merry Christmas to you.
Thank you, Jim. I'm fine. I calmed down a little bit. I think I was, when I get, off a little bit, I tend to go. But, you know, by the time the bottom of the hour came, I said, okay, we're going to play some pretty music, and I had a sip of my Dr. Pepper, and I'm all better now.
Good.
Merry Christmas to you, too.
Dr. Pepper can do more than Milton can to justify the ways of God to ban, right?
Yes, I want to know everything about how you've decorated your house.
I have 3,000 lights outside the patio, and they're all
on a... Are you kidding?
Mm-hmm. They're all on a rheostat, and they just... my Lord, if I cut it all the way up, you can see it from outer space. But that's the...
Jim, really? How beautiful. So you have them, like, dimmed down to... you have them, like, wrapped around trees, too?
Uh-huh. I do, yeah. And I have a row of bonsais, and that wakes the walkway. And it's pretty. And I have Malibu lights on the other side of the walkway. But they just...
Jim, that calls for a huge Christmas party, honey. Don't you want me to announce your address on the air, and we'll have a regional LGBT convention over there?
No, I think not. I don't think it'd be quite big enough. Thank you very much, and I appreciate the thought. And I have a huge Norfolk Island pine in here, and there's just a huge ribbon on it. And then on the coffee table, there's a ceramic Christmas tree. And then I have all my houses out, about 50 of the department, 56 houses. Of course, they stay up year-round.
Are they like houses like with snow around them, or just like ceramic, or what are they?
They're just architectural things. Everything from Big Ben to Victoria Station to the Empire State Building. And it's just, I have collected these things since 1987. So it's kind of Christmassy over here. And it looks nice. I like it. Other people might.
Well, I should say so. Jim, you got it. If you want, I won't tell you, you've got to. But if you took some pictures that nobody would know where it was, we could even post them on the site. Hell, I put pictures in Strictly Confidential.
I can accommodate you. But listen.
Yeah, I would love to see.
Absolutely. But I have 3 stories for you might be interested in.
Cool.
Just craziness of people. The first is, you heard about the woman in the mall who broke Santa Claus.
No, honey, I missed that one altogether. Which mall, what woman?
On crutches, she sat in Santa's lap, groped him. Santa got very upset because a bunch of kids saw it, and now she's being charged with sexual assault and disturbing the peace.
Jim, this is for real? It's not one of your stories? This is for real?
I don't make stories up. I tell the truth. I've never made a story up.
Well, I mean, you know, it's not like a story like the guy who... you know, knocked down the toilet wall or something. You know, it's like this. I'll be damned. Where was this, Jim?
And I'm not sure where it was. I think it was somewhere in Northern California. I didn't get the location, but I heard it over the radio station on the West Coast.
I bet
story,
you know.
Story number one, and you know, she was.
Yes.
I can imagine a 30-something-year-old woman wanting to sit on Santa's lap, but that's okay. But you
maybe she had a toddy.
Well, you just leave Santa's alone, and that's what you should do. The second story has to do with a man in the San Francisco Bay Area who worked for NASA. On a government computer, he had 600 kiddie porn things. They just named
really?
Him. And he'd been doing this since 85 to 87 or something like that. 2005 to 2007. And how that happened, I don't know. But anyway, he no longer works for the government. I mean, you know, stupid.
Well, it is awfully stupid. And you know, even putting it on your personal computer, I worked for the state of Florida for a number of years. I was a computer guy at the Department of Environmental Protection, but that's not part of the story, really. The part of the story was that there was someone that got fired there, and what they were doing is they were downloading pornography from the Internet. It wasn't kiddie porn, but it was pornography from the Internet. And instead of storing it on their local hard drive, like on their drive C, where nobody would ever really realize it was there, unless a coworker saw them when he was looking at them or something, he stored them on the mainframe. So, of course, every night the mainframe gets backed up, and, you know, millions of file names fly by, and, you know, the backup operators see these things. And, you know, if you start seeing file names like, you know, I don't know, sexywoman.jpg, you know, a whole series of those, you have to realize, yeah. So he got, for why do these people think they could do that on a government computer? I'm just amazed.
Now, here's one that will really blow your mind. This happened at the Mayo Clinic in Phoenix. Last fall, this man had a gallbladder operation, and one of the physicians attending the operation had a cell phone capable of taking pictures. I guess it was a blackjack or something like that. But
yeah,
the man apparently had on his member tattooed hot rod, and actually the doctor took a picture of it, was spreading it around, and now the hospital is very upset about it, and the patient is even more upset about it for having his privacy violated.
But Jim, why did the doctor do? I missed that. Why did the doctor take the picture to begin with?
Because on his private, on his member, he had hot rod tattooed on it.
But so there was no medical reason. It's just that the doctor thought this was it. Yeah, and so the guy. Interesting.
And I just thought to myself, ouch!
It was probably a jailhouse tattoo.
I don't know. Of course, I know a woman in Columbia, South Carolina, who had her lips permanently colored and her eyelashes or eyebrows done. And she told me the reason she did it was because when she came out of the pool, she wanted to look her best and not lose her makeup. So she said it all colored. And I said, my God, she said it was pretty painful. Tattooing is not exactly a painless process, but vanity, vanity, vanity. What can you say about vanity?
Well, Jim, tell me, if you met her, did it look like real makeup? Because, you know, Tammy Faye did that, and she looked pretty good on TV.
It looked all right.
It did.
Yeah,
I'll be there.
Well, I've got one more story that just knocked your socks off. And this is
okay.
And just, I don't know what has gotten into people. I think that Emperor Wang of the planet Porno is bombarding the Earth with some kind of crazy sex ray. And, like a flesh form. This gentleman was driving on the street in San Francisco, and she was drinking, and she crossed the median 7 times, and they finally stopped her. And she was very indignant. She was demanding to use the cell phone. They said, no, you can't use your cell phone until we book you, and then you gave a phone call. Well, she just hiked up her skirt and arched her back and tried to urinate on the policeman.
She didn't.
Yeah.
You know, what drugs are these people on? Sometimes
I go to the dumpster and I have a robe, this long velour robe with a hood on it, and I guess I look like one of the brothers, but nonetheless, sometimes I will go out to the dumpster and stuff at night dressed like that, and I will dump trash and stuff, but I just don't like to get up and have to do something like that in the morning. And I think I'm crazy, but Lord, I think I'm pretty sane because that's all I do.
Well, that is, that's not bad at all. I run out to my mailbox in my pajama bottoms. I always open the front door and listen to be sure none of the neighbors are going up and down the road. And if I can't hear a car, I'll run to the mailbox and run back.
Invariably, whenever you go out like that, somebody always pulls up or something. You know, they're always looking, like, oh, this is him.
As long as
I'm not doing it, flashing anybody, I don't feel too bad about it. But, I mean, I just don't understand people and some of the stuff they do. I really don't. I mean, that guy with the computer working for NASA and having 600 pictures of child pornography, it is just absolutely mind-blowing. There's no way I can even think of why he would do something like that.
No, it's become common knowledge that emails and files are property of the employer or and certainly of the government. And
I mean, porn is one thing, but kiddie porn, good Lord, you don't have that anywhere.
Yeah, this...
You know, private computer at home, they can arrest you for that, can't they?
I think if you have, like, a kiddie porn on it, they certainly do. And in fact,
just leave that alone. I mean, if that's how you get your kicks, then kick it up a few years. And don't... That's just nasty. It's just... I just can't understand it. But there you have it. And, you know, it's just absolutely insane. So, still, in spite of all the insanity, I want you to know that Miss Ellen's portieres have been stored away, and I'm not running around the old mansion in there trying to kill Dr. Drew and Cousin Miriam. It's been decorated for Christmas, and, you know, trying to do what I got to do and honor the occasion.
Well, Jim, that's an awful lot of work to do that much lighting. It must have taken a solid week, did it not, at
you
least?
You know, I can leave them up year-round. And just don't when a certain spring burns out, I just buy extra lights ahead of time and I replace them. And it, you know, in January and February when things are so bleak and people are kind of down from Christmas and stuff the way I am, sometimes I'll just switch them on lightly and there's just little dots of light and it looks pretty, particularly when the snow is on top of it.
Oh, I bet. I've never seen lights under the snow. In fact, I've seen very little snow.
They really do. I remember the first time I went to Europe, I flew over London going to Brussels National, and I looked down out of the plane, and I see London below, and the effect was very much the same, the orange glow and stuff like that, the lights under it through the fog. And, you know, I've always thought if you've got a light in your house and you can't control it, you're doing the wrong thing. Because every light I have is on a dimmer, and if I can't control that sucker, it's not going to get lit. And besides,
well, you know, Jim, there's a lot of truth in that. There was in fact, I had this scene down at the little Methodist church that I go to. At Christmas time, every year they would like turn off the lights, the overhead lights in the church, and people would light candles, and that was like the deal. Okay. But they just had them on a switch, and it's like all of a sudden somebody throws a switch, and it's like so freaking rude. And so I insisted that we put a dimmer in there to slowly bring down the lighting. That's kind of important, you know.
Well, yeah.
It matches you.
You know, you always look your best in a certain type of light. Your house looks a lot better when it's lit because, you know, homes are basically lived in to live in at night, right? So most people are out during the day. And I've been doing that for years, and I just... It's just a little decorating tip. It'll save you a lot of money on your electric bill, and it takes a bright light and makes it into a jewel.
Well, isn't that interesting? I have a little story. When I was living in Portland, Oregon, I was involved with electronic components and manufacturers and what have you, and there was a little company, and they made this device for restaurants. And what it was restaurants that didn't want to, like, you know, when it's transitioning from afternoon into evening, they didn't want to, like, suddenly lower the light level. So these devices you could buy and then put it in the system, and what it would do is at a certain time, it would slowly begin dimming the lights, like over a period of, you could set it 30 minutes or an hour or whatever, and it would, you know, there was no way you would ever know the light level was changing. It was very subtle, and I thought that was pretty cool.
And it's kind of to the eye, too. It really is. Because, you know, real bright lights are not good for your eyes. They're not. Maybe I'm photophobic, but I mean, you know, as far as I know, I have 20/20 vision, and, you know, I have pilot's eyes. And
God, I wish I had 20/20. I've got to get a new pair of glasses now. It's getting ridiculous.
But I've always worn dark glasses, and always. And I just think that lighting is really important, and it's really pretty at Christmas if you do that. And it's just fun. And that's all I had to say about decorating. And I've got enough. I'll tell you, they call it the Christmas house.
I bet
that's slightly bad, but that's all right. You know, it's kind of like King, you know, people used to say that King Louis of Bavaria, who built like Schwanstein, that beautiful castle that Disney bottled his after, you know, just crazy. I don't think Lewis is crazy at all. I just think he was just, he had a wonderful mind and, you know, just has the money to do what he wanted to do. I can't condemn him at all for it. I could, I could certainly, you know, follow that. If you ever have a chance to see any movies about him, they're really wonderful. You know, how he decorated all these caverns and things like that. He was Wagner's patron. And,
really?
Yeah, and he had all these just colored lights and theatrical sets and things like that. And he had a boat that he could travel in at night. But later, the people of Bavaria got tired of his successes, and they overthrew him, and he drowned mysteriously in the lake. And he was one of the last Bavarian members of the House of Wittelsbach that ruled that province. But nonetheless, you know, I just wonder. I think this is kind of... It's kind of nice to indulge your whimsy if you have the means.
Yeah, there's a lot to be said for whimsy. It keeps you sane sometimes, but nothing else will. Whimsy will.
That's it. And Disney Marvelous Castle, not Schwanstein, New Schwanstein. It's a beautiful old castle in this area. And so, anyway, I take this opportunity to wish you a very Merry Christmas and a prosperous and a healthy new year. And,
thank you, Jim.
So things will work out. Everything.
Thank you. And I wish the same for you. I'm sure the whole network does. You've been a faithful listener for a long, long time.
Well, you know, we're at opposite ends of the spectrum, Peter. You know that. I know that. And we have different opinions on different things and different means and strategies and stuff like that. But, hey, if, you know, I believe in this country, you can disagree to disagree. And you don't have to worry about anybody knocking on your door at 4 o'clock in the morning and dragging you down to Lubyanka. You know?
Yeah, at least there's that.
Yeah, at least we still have that, I hope. And basically, I'm a lot more conservative, and, well, we won't go into that. I've just heard certain belief systems to which I adhere, which I find comforting. I think you do to a certain extent, but, hey, let 100 schools of thought contend, let 100 flowers bloom.
Well, Jim, that's a great call, and we wish you the very best too. We really do.
Thank you very much. You have a good Christmas.
Thank you, and we want to see those pictures.
Okay, and give our regards to Doggy. I hope Doggy calls trouble with oatmeal soap, and
she had
a good friend.
She had an oatmeal bath today, as a matter of fact.
Well, good for her.
She's looking very fashionable.
I have a cat who's fascinated with the bathroom, but whenever I get in there, he jumps in there, and when I was taking a shower, he jumped in the shower. And I said, okay, Rupert, here you go. First shampoo, then conditioner. And he's still like newly minted bunny. And let me push him up, and I blew dry him with a hair dryer.
I can't believe the cat cooperated. That's uncanny.
Well, I just sat on the commode with him and, you know, and I was drying him off, and I just cranked him up with a hair dryer. I cranked him out and blew him out like I was Vidal Sassoon.
I'll do that. Well, that's a story in itself. That would rate a YouTube video right there if you had that.
Oh, well, I don't know about that now. I don't know. I just said, well, you know, as long as you're in here, you may as well have the benefit of a good wash and a good shampoo and a good conditioning. Make your coat look great.
Well, does the cat, let me ask this, does the cat still come in there, or was that the last time
I get in there, I sit down and he jumps in my lap and then he's in the tub.
That's amazing. That is a very special kitty.
Well, he is indeed, I'll tell you. That's Rupert Brooke, named after an English poet. And so he's the orange tabby cat, and weighs about 20 pounds. He's a good-sized fella. But he's thankful to have a home because 2 years ago he didn't, and I happened to pick him up right outside here. You know, he wouldn't let me touch him for a while, but then he had gotten sick, and that's when I nabbed him, put him in the cat box, and off he went to the vet. He was okay, had him neutered, and then, you know, had the antibiotics and everything, and he's been real grateful. And I've been grateful for saving him. I used to be in the cat business. Since I've been here, I think I've saved 30 cats.
Really?
Mm-hmm. I have. All the cats I have are feral cats that have come to me. And while these people have to go to a damn pet shop and pay all this money when there's so many animals who need a home. It's just beyond.
I agree.
You know,
I agree.
And they have an ad on TV, and it shows all these animals and things like that, and there's a woman singing, I don't know who she is, and oh, it just breaks my heart every time I see it.
Yeah. I was looking at some animal shelter public service announcements on YouTube the other day. It's surprising there are a lot of them there. And I was only able to get through two of them. I was just crying. I couldn't sit through them. Some of them are very painful.
Yeah, they are. But nonetheless, you know, as I said before, in doing that, it's better to light a candle and curse the darkness.
Yeah, or light a whole damn chandelier. What the hell?
There you go. And I have Shady Lady, who's the daughter of Mau Mau Meow, who passed away. And then I had Ufer. His name was UFR, which stands for Unfinanced Requirement. I picked him up, mother up at Fort Jackson when I worked there. And she had six kittens, and I took them out to the Animal Protection League. And I used to do work on the weekends for them and stuff, and that's how they all got placed and everything. Her name was Mama Fun. I could go back through the years and name them all. You know, it's just, they're all special things. They're all special creatures. And they were all given to us by God.
You know, I have to tell you a story. One of my first boyfriends back when I was in my 20s, he loved cats, but he didn't have one. But what he did was he would always travel, and he had to travel a lot in his work from week to week to go to these towns. And he's a bank auditor is what he did. So that's what he had to go to different towns. So he kept in his trunk kitty food, you know, several cans and some kitty crunchies, because his thing was to feed. Anytime he would come across a cat that was lost, he would feed the cat. And some people are really drawn to that.
Well, you know, you try to help something out when you can, and, you know, it's an innocent creature. It's been cast adrift on the sea of, destiny, and by what only knows what. But, you know, if you see it, if you could do something, you try to. And, I had my cat Ufer, UFR, which means, like I say, in government. Whenever you want to advance a program, you don't have the money, you submit what's called a Ufer. Well, when I got him, that's what he was. He was an unfinanced requirement. Thanks to UFR. And so people used to think, what? That's a funny name for a cat. And I said, well, he's an unfinanced requirement. That's what he is. And he's one I took to the vet in Maryland outside of D.C. when I was really badly hungover one Saturday morning, and God, there must have been 50 animals in there all screaming and carrying on, and I had to fill out this thing to them. I had to get shots and everything. And so I looked at the form, and I looked at the woman behind there, and I gave it to her, and I said, there's no place on this form for his religion. And this lady, what did you say? I said, there's no place on this form for his religion. And she said, well, you just put it right down there by your signature, okay? And I could hear her say to the other woman, she said, that man's crazy. They got ahead of everybody else.
They had a very low crazy tolerance around there.
Well, they took me ahead of everybody else. They wanted to get me out of there.
You know, and if you were in New York, it'd take a hell of a lot more to pull off crazy.
I know. There in suburban Maryland, it didn't. And the doctor said, you know, I see you work for so-and-so, what do you do? And I said, well, if I told you, I'd have to kill you. And she said, okay, no problem. So, and they even forgot to ask me about the bill. I had to say, look, how much do I owe you? They just wanted to get me out of Cedar Ridge Animal Clinic.
I'm sure they did.
It was right down the street from the house where Mary Surratt housed John Wilkes Booth. That's where the veterinary clinic was.
Yeah, North Carolina's got a lot of history. Well, Maryland too. We had a guest from Maryland, what a candidate. He told us some wonderful stories about the buildings and what have you. His name was Bayless, I think.
In Prince George's County, sure is. So that's my story about lights, Christmas, and cats. And I take up too much of your time, and I apologize.
Thank you for joining us tonight, Jim. And merry, merry Christmas to you, sir.
Likewise. Bye bye now.
Bye-bye. And that's our dear friend Jim, who apparently is not having to wear the drapes this Christmas. I'm so pleased. But, oh, honey, he looks so good in a pair of drapes. It's just a little something he saw in the window. A dear friend of the network, because he is such a longtime supporter. And as he said, we don't always agree. We are from different parts of the spectrum, as he said. He acknowledges that. But, you know, he's still Jim. And God bless him for that. To heck with the news. It's 10:15. So instead of doing the news, as I said, I do want to run three of these Sandpiper tracks for you this evening because they're all so remarkable. And in the future, I'll mix them in more. But I've just discovered these. I just sent me a collection of CDs, and some of these songs I'm just fascinated with. I wanted to run three of them tonight. Now, this next track we're going to run, and we'll run it in just a second here. I'm introducing it now. It's by Dorothy Morrison, and the track is called Rain. Now, this is a German track, and it's on the WEA label. And this track was done in 1970. Now, this is an import track, obviously, and frankly, I'm not quite sure if DJ Larry Sanders remixed this, if it was shorter and he extended it. I suspect he did, but I don't have full details. We'll quiz him about that when he's but this is a very rare import track from Germany in 1970, and it's straight from vinyl. Of course, there were no CDs back then, it's like going to church. I just love this track. It's called Rain, Dorothy Morrison. Now, several things come to mind with this song. One, what in the name, how do you explain what is obviously has its total roots in black gospel, you know, the whole spirit, the whole choir, the whole, you know, southern black churches, you know, how in the hell is that coming out of Germany? Did I miss something? This is from a German label. Forgot the letters of it. Let's see. It's a German label called WEA from 1970. Okay, so how in the hell did that track end up on a German level label? I could not explain. We'll have to ask Larry Sanders that. And in addition, the other thing that is so interesting to me about this song is the Sandpiper was no small town, little teeny place. There were typically 500-600 people dancing on the dance floor. I mean, you know, it was mega huge. We're talking Trocadero type, you know, major. Okay, can you see 500 gay guys dancing this song? Oh my stars! I could just hear, I could see the hands going up in the air and shaking. It's going to rain. Oh my stars! What a fabulous track! I wish I'd had that back when I was DJing, but I did not. But it is, I did die for a track just because it's so surprising. One would never, one, expect it to come from Germany, and one would never, two, suspect it to be played in a gay club. But you know, I've just, have you guys ever heard that song before? I'd never heard it before. I'd be interested in getting an email of people who have actually heard that track. It's by her name again is Dorothy Morrison. It's called Rain. What an amazing track. Oh, yeah, and we have another one, too. It's also fabulous. First, I'm going to do a story here about Baghdad. And so many things have been happening over there. We know about the young boy sentenced to 7,000 lashes. And they were for having sex with a man. It was consensual, a sex with a man. And of course, 7,000 lashes are fatal. Hell, probably 50 are fatal. So what they're doing is they're trotting him out into a public square and giving him as many lashes as he can stand and then putting him back in jail till he heals and taking him out again and continuing the treatment, which is, of course, horrifying because there's no the medical treatment. I've read stories, I don't know if I've done them on the air, but about the atrocious, there's no medical care. You basically lie there. And, you know, you hope another prisoner will lay a shirt on your back or try to, you know, dry the blood. You're not going to get any antibiotics, you know, infections. I mean, God, I can't even get it done to you. And, you know, but there for the grace of God, you know, it's not, I mean, this is the same theocracy that taken to its fullest extent, when you think it all the way through, and I completely agree with Bob, if you think what these people in the United States, this theocracy thing, you know, this dominionist, if you think it through, that's where it's headed. All biblical. We're talking about stoning people in the fatwa that was issued in Iraq and Iran. The punishment was to be death by the most extreme methods, I think, is the way that was phrased. So anyway, in Baghdad, you know, it's a place where outsiders are always viewed with very deep suspicion, and attracting any attention at all puts your life in danger. The trick there is to, well, it's not much of a trick, but you desperately try to fit in. But Muhammad could not blend in, even if he wanted to. He's 37 years old, and he's been openly gay for most of his adult life, and for him, his expression was that meant growing his hair long and taking estrogen. Now, I'm not sure if, you know, when you get these foreign reports, I don't know if gay is the right word. If you're taking estrogen, it may be that he has a transsexual nature or transgendered nature. But nonetheless, that's what it meant for him. And he said in the past that was very little danger. It was not, no big deal. And this is basically true throughout the whole Middle East, that men have always been, you know, publicly affectionate. But at least until recently, back in the day, as Muhammad puts it, you know, many of his friends, they would have to slip into their lovers' houses late at night. And that was okay as long as you didn't draw too much attention to yourself. and you could exist in society. There was nobody hunting you down, and this was all until we invaded. And yes, we invaded. There's no pretense anymore. This was not defense. We invaded a country that didn't attack us. This is common knowledge except to the, I hesitate to call them idiots because I might offend them, but at this point, I don't really care. So in any case, being openly gay is simply not an option in the new Iraq, the new horrifying Iraq. Religious extremism have left Muhammad and his gay friends feeling completely vilified. This is the country, if you'll recall, they're running safe houses, and they have to run them out of England. And in January, and as a matter of fact, the United Nations report described the increased persecution and the torture and the killing by the police forces. These are not judicial. These are not killings that have gone through the court executions. These are just plain see 'em, kill 'em. The Iraqi of Iraqi lesbians and gay men. Of course, in 2005, the Shiite cleric he issued that fatwa for calling for the death of gay and lesbians to be killed. Oh, here it is, in the worst, most severe way. Well, gee, doesn't that sound like torture to you? Maybe pull off the fingernails, you know, slices like death by a thousand razor blades and maybe an ant bed and battery cables until you die. It's just amazing to me. How has this happened? How has this happened over just people who don't love the way the other people love? But, you know, love is love, but I just don't get it. He and his friends, they don't feel safe, of course. They long to leave Iraq. They don't have money. Nobody can get a job. And probably no one to employ them because, you know, maybe their voices might give them away. Who knows? They can't get visas. And they're agreeing to this interview to a reporter in Baghdad only on the condition that their last names not be used. And it wouldn't surprise me if they didn't change the first names, too, although it does not say that here. It's an underground existence, and it's behind drawn curtains, and he describes one of the safe houses he lives in as a dingy house in southwest Baghdad. Five people share the apartment. Four are gay men, and one is a lesbian woman. Well, actually, the woman says she's bisexual. And they've had to move six times in the last 3 years, and each time they move, it's just ahead of a neighborhood raid by the Shiite and the Sunni death squad. See, they have to keep a close ear out in the community, and as soon as they hear any gossip about, you know, people whispering about who's living in that house, they immediately move because they know the next thing is the death squad kicks in the door. Muhammad goes on to say, people think they're so suspicious because they look like a cell of terrorists, but they can't tell people that they're a cell, but they're a cell of LGBT folks. Not a cell of terrorists. He had to shave his head. I don't know if it's completely shaved, but his hair is at least significantly shorter. He did that just a few days ago. He had it lopped off, and the reason is that the current thing that's happening there before they kill you, if you're lucky, you can get away, but extremists are stopping men with long hair in the streets, shearing their hair off in the street, and forcing them to eat their hair in the street. It's, of course, impossible to say how many gay men and women face any persecution if they're facing it in Iraq. Now, there's a Iraqi gay rights group. It's run by a former DJ, by the way. We DJs are just evil people, honey. We just activists, and we're homosexual agenda pushers, and we're not afraid. Hell, if you played records for a dance floor full of gay guys, you've already been through the crucible. There's nothing else. You know, if you could do that, there's not a whole lot else left in life that could be, that you have to worry about. The former DJ lives in London, and there's no way to tell how many LGBT people have been killed in Iraq since 2003. Just since 2003, the estimates are 500-600 people. This is, of course, you know, you compare that to the thousands of soldiers and civilians, but those are deaths, you know, because they think they're terrorists or they were standing too close to the explosion. You know, you take your chances in that city, but these people, the LGBT folks, are being hunted down. And you know, apparently back in the mid '80s and the early '90s, the gay nightlife, it flourished in Iraq. They were it began changing after the Islamic resolution, and Baghdad allowed a measure of liberation after the Iran-Iraq war. And there's the Tigris River, and there's a boulevard that runs along the Tigris River, and it's now right across from the Green Zone. And that was a common place for gay folks to get together and meet each other, and it was like a socializing place, like the back fence, so to speak. There were discos. I would kill to know what they were playing. Probably that German import we just ran. The discos were opening in the best hotels, the Ishtar Sheraton, the Palestine, the Saddam Hussein, he was his prized Al Rashid Hotel. It was a magnet for young gay men, and even young gay men with rouge cheeks and lip gloss paraded the streets, and the more masculine ones too. There were guys who came in from Kuwait and Saudi Arabia, and they some wore makeup, and it wasn't until 1991 there was just open sexual freedom. It deteriorated a bit after that, and then after the Persian Gulf War, Saddam Hussein put an end to the nightclub. You know, it's interesting, when a country falls into war and chaos and financial instability, that's when they start beating up on the groups that are less powerful, be they black or Mexican or gay or lesbian or disabled, or, you know, the list goes on and on. Anyway, that's Iraq, of course, was staggered with economic sanctions. So what do they do? They start enforcing the anti-gay laws. I mean, that's the reaction. Okay, economic sanctions, enforce the anti-homosexual. if it weren't a shame, if it weren't pitiful, you'd have to laugh at it. It's the only way to survive it. Homosexuality was, of course, accepted as long as it was in private. And it was, you could even, okay, if you could put the bribe in the right place, I mean, let's say you did something obvious and they did object to it, pretty much you'd get away with anything. But if something real obvious, you could get prison time. But you could even get out of that by placing a well-placed bribe. Now you don't even make it to the prison cell, or you're beaten to death. And the American invasion was expected. The gay community there was thrilled. It's going to usher in better times. And they thought their lives would be a paradise, but that is not the way things are. And nor will they ever be as long as we're involved in it, I'm sure. Shortly after Saddam was killed, the American soldiers burst in the apartment that Muhammad shared with his two brothers, and they were looking for insurgents. But one of the guys that burst in the apartment took a look at Muhammad with his long hair, and he was wrapped in a robe, and started saying, "What are you, a lady or a man?" And he said, "Are you a boy or a girl?" And then he looked at Muhammad's brother. "Who is this? Is this your girlfriend?" So the news raced through Muhammad's building, and all the neighbors began to know that he was gay. And his brother said, "Muhammad, you have to leave the house. You just can't live here anymore. I love you, but you can't stay here anymore. It's survival." So he rented another apartment, and he was joined by several gay friends, and they had to move 9 months later after the suspicious neighbors began to talk. And then it seems to be a nine-month cycle. 9 months after that, they had to move again, and they relied on small amounts of money that Mohammed would send to them, and also from the organization in London. And he taps on a network of acquaintances to ferret out safe houses. And you have to pay the landlords extra. And if you pay the landlords extra for your rent, they will alert you if any sort of rumor starts in the building. And one of the young men that lives in the group now, he says he sleeps with an older man for money. He says, he loves me, but I hate him. He's jealous, and he's old, and I don't love him, and he's nothing like anybody I could care for, but he does it for the money. This is how you have to survive. And he believes his future is very bleak, and indeed it is. But it's rough for everybody. I don't mean to say or suggest to you that it's just the LGBT folks having problems. All I'm saying to you is just trying to paint you a picture of what ours are, because unless I tell you, probably nobody else will. And speaking of Mitt Romney, this is very short. which we weren't, but now we are. I love to do that. That's my favorite one. Speaking of which we weren't, which we now are. Mitt Romney wept with relief when the Mormons ended discrimination against black folks. Now, is anybody, can I see a show of hands? Does anybody here believe that? I mean, anybody? You know, you couldn't be a member of the Church of Christ of Latter-day Saints if you were a black folks. You couldn't serve as a priest, and you didn't even really want to go because people like, oh, that's black folks. So anyway, he says he heard about the change being made that they would accept black folks. And I'm not sure if it's completely, but they accept them. So he was driving home through Cambridge, Massachusetts, and he heard it on the radio, and I pulled over and literally wept. This is a lie, by the way, and I can demonstrate to you why it's a lie, because of his phraseology, which comes up in just a minute. He says, even to this day, it's emotional. It's also very deep and fundamental in my life and my most core beliefs that all people are children of God. And this is where he gives it away, he says. I had no question that African Americans and blacks, and here's the word, generally, would have every right and benefit in the hereafter that everyone else had. Now, what is this? A freaking insurance policy? Rights and benefits and copays? Now, not every right, of course, just generally. Now, anybody who believes that people are generally equal does not pull off the damn road and weep. Only people with hearts that really get it pull off the damn road and weep. Anybody disagree? You know, I'm here. You can call me and disagree. I'll say yeah, but we can at least say so. 877, the number 4, head on. Let's see, it's 1040. I do want to run the other track. It's Christmas time. There's no need not to play two or three tracks during a show. And tomorrow night, by the way, I'm going to be running lots of Christmas music. I'll be telling you about some of the tracks before I run them. In fact, some of the listeners are sending in tracks, too. And our friend Glenn Rivera may be sending us some music. The selection I was going to use tomorrow is from the Sandpiper from MorningstarMelody.com. And the last track, now this is definitely one that Larry Sanders transferred and built up from a 45 RPM, because it originally ran 3 minutes 20 seconds, which was about the playing time. I think maybe you could get a max of maybe 3, 5, 4 minutes, or 4 probably. So he took it from a 3 minute 20 second track and got it all the way out to 6 minutes and 30 seconds. It's absolutely flawless. No part of the song is sacrificed, to make the mix. I mean, sometimes you get thinking, well, if I do this segue here, I'm going to miss part of the song, but damn, it's going to sound good. That was something he would forego. Every aspect of the song is there. And this particular song is just marvelous. It's from 1974. This is way back in the day, my friends. 1974. This is before I was DJing in the 80s. And it's a track by Johnny Bristol. You all know it. The track is called Hang On In There, Baby. You'll know it immediately. Hang On In There, Baby. It's Johnny Bristol, 1974, the Larry Sanders remix.
Yeah. Oh, baby. Hang in there, baby.
We'll make love tonight.
Don't be afraid.
That'll make it all right. I know just how you feel. I'm gonna hold you tight.
But we've almost got it made. Now that we've caressed, a kiss so warm and tender, I can't wait till we reach that sweet moment of surrender. We'll hear the thunder roar, feel the lightning strike. Words in other words.
words and not the word. We can't help but make it, 'cause there's true love between us, girl. So let us touch that crowd that every girl dreams of. Sweet virgin of the world, we can't help but make it, 'cause there's true love between us, girl. So let us touch that crowd that every girl dreams of. That you say, something's eating at you and it's about to get away. Oh, don't fight, baby. Open up the door, 'cause that's the key to the freedom that we've both been working for. Let it go, baby. Let it go, honey. Oh, right there, right there. Baby, don't you move it anywhere. Now, baby, what's that you say? Something's eating at you and it's about to get away. Oh, don't fight, baby. Open up the door, 'cause that's the key to the freedom that we've both been working for. Let it go, baby. Let it go, honey. Oh, right there, right there. Baby, don't you move it anywhere.
Absolutely stunning. And the build. It doesn't even bother to crescendo back down, to fade back down in the same sort of easy, no way. And then from, of course, it goes to the top, and then you can move up to the next level, and you're explaining more than I should. You know, I didn't have these tracks when I was DJing. I DJed in the 80s, and see, this music is coming primarily from the 70s through about 78, so most of this music I remember hearing on the radio, like everyone else did. Never heard these extended mixes, so this is new to me, too. And I should probably stop gushing about Larry Sanders. I've never seen the man, but, you know, don't throw bouquets at me. You know, people will say, no, don't know the man, but I think he's absolutely freaking fabulous. We have Susan on the line. Susan, welcome to the show.
Hi, Peter.
Hi, sweetheart.
Just thought you would be interested in Willard's latest little lie.
Oh, really? Okay, cool. Hit me with it.
Well, I was going by the TV shed earlier this evening, and they were showing a clip of him on Meet the Press where he was saying very earnestly that his dad marched in Mississippi with Martin Luther King Jr.
Whoa! You're ruining my whole karma here. Are you trying to tell me that Herbert? You can't just do this on the air. You cannot just do this to me. Okay, so Herbert is like marching in the civil rights parade.
He's claiming that Willard is claiming, you know, dear old, Mitt Willard, Mitt the can't make up his mind. Is claiming that his dear old dad in the 60s, when black people were still considered icky by the Mormon Church.
Icky, I love it. Okay. Yeah,
I have a confession to make. I have a confession to make, honey. I'm the granddaughter of a Mormon elder.
You really... Oh, this is wonderful inside scoop. You know the real deal. Didn't they used to say that blacks couldn't be a member because their lineage or something could never advance? They couldn't do it because they couldn't trace their roots back to something or another?
Well, it's because being black, they bore the mark of King.
Oh, that's right. The mark of King.
And, you know, this was in the 60s, and, Martin Luther King was doing his marches in the 60s, and apparently, according to dear old Willard, his dad was right up there with him, marching away. Now, you and I both know that's a large, steaming pile of, I won't go into that, at least on the air.
And it kills me, Susan, because they can say, they can go on, they can say anything, and nobody will correct them. Nobody will bring this up. And maybe years from now, somebody will in a book in the library that 12 people read, but it will never, I just can't take it.
Well, this host on MSNBC, he's the one that, he and Rachel Maddow were busily dissecting dear old Willard Ulrich. They weren't letting him get by with it. But he's one of the few.
Interesting. Is he claiming one of the main marches, for instance, like Selma, or one of the dangerous ones, or is it just one of the general purpose marches,
I honestly don't know, but you and I both know if Willard's father was within 1,000 miles of Martin Luther King Jr., it was sheer chance.
Yeah. Yeah, that reminds me of Mitt Romney's
trying to buy out of a slum.
Yeah, Mitt Romney's remarks about crying when, I remember crying when Martin Luther King died. I remember that. I specifically remember where I was. I remember the tears. I remember when JFK died. I remembered where I was. I remember the tears. I remember when the space shuttle blew up. I remember these things,
and
these are real.
You and I have a soul.
Yeah, thank you. Yes, it's got to do with a soul. And these people, anything they say that has to do with concern for fellow man is immediately suspect because it's completely, does not compute.
Yeah, it's just... Anyway, I thought I'd meet you today and give you a large time laugh, because can you just imagine him very earnestly explaining that on Meet the Press? How about
and Tim Russert not batting an eye? As long as Tim Russert doesn't bat an eye, we know it's fact, is the way that game is played.
Oh, God. Anyway, you're getting running out of time, and so you have a very, very Merry Christmas, or whatever it is you call it.
I call it Christmas because I'm at a loss for anything else to call it, except maybe, you know what they call it? What do the markets call it? You know, where they go from back into the black, maybe Merry back into the black, you know.
Or do what we do, do what I do. Either blessed be or ramen. Or by the spaghetti monster.
Yeah, the spaghetti monster. Well, Susan, I appreciate your call, and that's a hell of a thing to spring on a guy, at 11 o'clock at night. Sure, I'll have a few nights. But thank you for telling us that.
We'll good night, honey. Bye-bye.
Thank you for calling, Susan. God bless. And that is, of course, Susan. And Susan lives way away in the Pacific Northwest, where I lived for a number of years in Portland, Oregon. She also lives in Oregon, and I miss it terribly. It is beautiful. It is stunning. Like, people say, it rains a lot, But the deal is, since it rains a lot, everything is always freshly washed clean. Everything looks immaculate. It's all so freaking beautiful. The leaves shine, the curbs shine, it's just beautiful. It's not like it rains torrentially. In fact, the rainfall there is the same as the rainfall here in terms of inches. It's just that in Florida, it doesn't rain necessarily that often, but when it rains like hell in torrents. In Oregon, it rains almost every day, not every, but almost, but it only rains these little drizzles. And in fact, I had a laughing experience with the company I was working for. We were in the office, and I was about to go out and get in the car. I had to go visit a client, and the secretary said, "Now be careful, it's raining cats and dogs out there." And I looked out the window and I thought to myself, "Honey, you have no clue. You honestly have no clue." Briefly, I'll mention this, and then we're going to have to close. I've been meaning to get to it for several nights, but it's about mercury in mascara. Apparently, Minnesota is the first state to ban intentionally added mercury in cosmetics. It's tougher than the federal government's ban. Retailers who knowingly sell mercury products for eyeliner eye products, eyeliner, the whole list of the eye care products, the beauty stuff, can merchants $700 fines, manufacturers $100,000 fine. Mercury does neurological damage to people, even in tiny qualities. Every source adds to it. It's cumulative, and so it just occurred to me that this completely explains Norma Desmond. And I just thought you to want to know the I'm ready for my scene now, Mr. DeMille, is a Norma Desmond moment caused by the freaking mercury. And it was eyeshadow and I think even lipstick, something like a preservative. Who knows? Just the scariest stuff. You never know what you're going to find. But okay, now what do I want to do? Oh, yeah, okay. The Head On Radio Network horn section is coming up next. And I know that Bob and I are going to be doing the horn section, and I saw John pop into the chat room ever so briefly and then out again, so I'm not sure if John's still running some repair procedures and he's planning on joining us or if it will be a Bob and I. But nonetheless, we're going to do that, and then likely we'll do if John's not back with us, we'll run a repeat of one of John's previous All Foxed Up shows. And so that's it. It's been a great night. Love talking to you. I'm glad you liked the music. I loved it. Here's Cynthia Manley reminding you to... It's the truth that the truth makes the truth.
This is the Quality News Network. Amidst police batons and pepper spray, New Orleans City Council members unanimously approved a controversial plan to tear down 4,500 public housing units damaged by Hurricane Katrina. A crowd of demonstrators tried to get into today's meeting inside New Orleans City Hall, but were kept out by local police using pepper spray and stun guns. Several legal challenges to the proposal have not been resolved. A CNN poll released today shows the top three Democratic presidential candidates in a dead heat in Iowa just 2 weeks before the caucuses. Leading the Republican slate is former Arkansas Governor Mike Huckabee, followed by former Massachusetts Governor Mitt Romney. Former New York City Mayor Rudy Giuliani is in third place. Congressman Tom Tancredo has dropped out of the race for the Republican presidential nomination and thrown his support to rival Mitt Romney. Doctors treating Rudy Giuliani have given him the all-clear to return to New York after he spent the night in a St. Louis hospital. Giuliani was hospitalized late last night with flu-like symptoms. A year-long battle over the federal budget has come to an end. President Bush both admonished and praised Congress for passing a $556 billion spending plan. Mr. Bush complained this morning that lawmakers had wasted time and taxpayers' money